Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Most certainly do love this land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the East Anglia's EDL radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglia's EDL radio show, the official English Defence League's radio station and the official voice of the EDL. And my co-host of the show this evening is, we've got a couple. We've got our very own Carol, a.k.a. Red Fox Blogger, nicknamed tonight, Miss Foxy. Great. Great nickname tonight. And, I've just seen our very own Mr. Tommy English, EDL Heroes. His name there. Hey, nice one, Tommy. Good to see you. And of course, not forgetting our very own Mr. Cat Strangler 101, Mr. Tim Burton, Mr. Kitty Cat.
Good evening, Jeff.
Let the cat out. Meow.
And there he is.
Good evening, Tommy. Good evening,
Phil. Good evening, everybody.
Nice
good
to see
evening,
you all.
Kel.
And a very buzzer-jamming-filled evening pre-demo. Good evening to you all.
Yes, I know. He always gets, ladies and gentlemen, our Tommy always gets rather, well, the old nerves jingling. He can't wait to get on the road and to do the demonstration. And as I say, it's about one and a half night's sleep, isn't it? Because I know you won't get too much sleep tomorrow night, Tom.
Yep, and I've got the demo details here. EDL not welcoming slow. Oh, sorry, that appears to be the wrong one. Yeah, they had the wrong demo detail. Then people would have gone to the UAF meeting point saying that.
Who was that? The UAF report, was it?
You don't even spell slow right saying that. You don't even spell seeks right. Oh, I'm going to find the right one now.
You can't go reporting on the UAF crap, Tom, you know.
I would have been sending all the EDL to the UAF meeting point. Let's shout it clear, EDL not welcome here. Is that supposed to be some sort of tune?
Well, they'll have trouble putting that to music, won't they?
Right, there we go. Here's the real demo. Here's the real details.
There you go.
So, cars, coaches, minibuses all coming to Slough at M4 Junction 6. Make your way to Slough train station, Bruno Way. Slough, SL1, 1XW, so that's Sierra Lima 1, 1X-ray Whiskey, where police will arrange parking. Those travelling by train, disembark at Slough station and make your way outside, where you'll be directed to the meeting point. Aim to arrive between 11:30 and 1 o'clock. The march will start at 11:45. See you all there, no surrender. That was nice and short and sweet, wasn't it?
Yes. So, maybe a little way through the show we'll give another report on it as well for people that's coming in a little bit late, Tom.
I do have a very interesting story to tell you about that today at work. That'll probably good way to open the show.
Go ahead, Tom.
Now, everyone knows how much I love my bacon sandwich, and Jeff knows I just nuke it with tomato ketchup, because Jeff knows I just cover everything with tomato sauce, don't you, Jeff?
Yeah.
Well, I was at lunchtime today, I thought to myself, oh, I could really do with a nice big bacon sandwich right now. So I went down to Greg's and I got one for about £3.50. Mm. And I came back, I put it on my plate, and I thought, oh, I'll left my phone in my pocket. And I came back, and my manager was halfway through eating the bloody thing.
No.
Yeah.
What?
He thought I bought it.
Oh, yeah, that's me, just scoffed his bacon roll, Kel.
And it didn't just stop there. I shouted, come here, come here, and he shot out of that canteen. I was chasing him around the office. You know what I shouted out? I should have shouted, stop him, someone stop him. I'll string him up by his balls.
After you, he put his little thing on so as to stop getting any tomato ketchup down the front. And he comes back and he finds his manager's halfway through his bacon roll. Isn't that nice?
Oh, it was like my kidneys had just been ripped out. I was like, you're eating my bacon sandwich. I'd have covered it in tomato sauce.
Oh.
But we had a good laugh about
that. That's sacrilege, isn't it, Kel? Someone stealing your bacon bloody sandwich, bacon roll. Isn't it, guys? That's sacrilege, that is.
Bad.
Oh, my goodness me. So you went without your bacon roll, or you had a quarter of a bacon roll left? Sorry.
I had a quarter of a bacon roll and half a Mars bar as well.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, never mind. Yeah, well, you'd have to keep your bacon sandwich in your
pot. I wonder if this is our famous Phantom Bacon Tower.
Oh, he's laughing. I know you think this ain't funny, yeah, Tim. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Is that a bacon sandwich in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me? I know.
Oh. It's some, yeah,
trust
again,
you,
it's
Tim.
Something fat and full of grease.
You're talking about the woman I love.
Oh, it sounds something greasy. It sounds like something like a UAS cafe or something like that, doesn't it?
Is it Friday already?
Yeah.
No.
It must be.
We started Friday on a Thursday, a bit earlier.
I'm also excited for Slout and Tim. There is a space on the coach if you want us to come and collect you.
There you go.
Oh, well, Jeff did tell me about this. However, yeah. I have been reminded that I'm supposed to be attending a prior engagement, so I'm not sure that I can actually do this. I might have to do a bit of grovelling, so I can't make any promises tonight, I'm afraid, lads, but hopefully we'll have an answer for you tomorrow.
Brilliant.
Well, give me the heads up on it, Tim, tomorrow sometime, you know, give me a quick Skype or something or other, then I can always give... Tom, a quick give him a call and let him know. Okay, buddy?
All right. Yeah, but what I will say is if I don't end up spending time at Her Majesty's pleasure after 18th of February, then I understand there's something taking place in Birmingham in March.
That's
so great. I shall make sure I'm around for that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I know, because when you was on the show... When Glenn was on the show, we was talking about speakers at the demonstrations, and he did ask you, didn't he, if you'd like the area that you lived, and that
yeah,
we got a demo
he
coming
did,
up.
He did. I think this was about a week before I had two of West Midlands' finest call round and visit me to invite me to have a cup of tea with them at the police station.
Yeah.
And so depending on how things go, I may or may not be available for that.
Well, but, we'll keep everything crossed, and you know, hopefully that it won't be seen that you'll be serving any time in a Majesty's prison.
I hope common sense does prevail
in the end, Tim. That's all I will say.
You'll be on the radio, and you'll be saying to yourself, "Now, where's that Tim gone? Where's that? Do you know he'll do?"
I've just received some news that should be read out.
He's even got himself locked up. He'll do anything to avoid appearing on the radio show or going on a demo.
I've just received some news that should be read out, to be honest with you guys.
What's that?
There's a storm headed over the Atlantic. 150-mile-an-hour winds is set to hit Britain tomorrow in a weekend filled with apocalyptic rain, 150-mile-an-hour killer winds.
Oh, my God.
50-mile-an-hour killer wind. And there was me thinking it might have been the extra ingredients I put in the chili earlier today.
What's he like? Tim, you're on a roll tonight.
That seems to have tickled Kel.
Oh, you're on a roll, my old son, tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, this, as you've noticed tonight, we are at Comedy Central, East Anglia's EDL Radio Show, official Comedy Central.
I think
and now we've got Kel giggling.
Ingredients in the chili. I'm going to mute myself. Hang on.
Because they gone with the wind, Kel.
Yeah, you want to be careful.
Gone with the wind.
She's
winds of change.
She's listening to the winds of change, yeah.
That's it. That's it,
Kel. Oh, my God. We're starting on the flatulent jokes already. So early in the evening.
I've got your new nickname, Kel. It's Kel. I laughed so much I muted myself. Fritzy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've just got to let you know that we we really do enjoy doing these shows. We like to talk about the serious issues, but we also know that you, our listeners out there, well, you like to be entertained at the same time. And I can say that, certainly, if you're around on Fridays, and especially tonight, then you will be entertained, certain things that we do. We don't expect it to be turning into comedy as such, but sometimes, well, we have a bit of fun, don't we, guys? Let's be honest. I mean,
well,
we know the Islamic threat with us 24/7, but at the same time, we can enjoy and share each other's humour, and we can laugh along. We put humour into Islam.
It's the best. Well,
we sure do.
I mean, think about it, guys. I mean, what do you call a Muslim who owns a camel and a donkey?
Spoilt for choice.
Bisexual.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
You guys, don't make me work so hard tonight, please.
We'll say you're not too bad. You're onto us, theoretically correct.
Oh, instead of hearing the vixen scream, you're going to be hearing the vixen howl of laughter.
Yeah, we heard that earlier. It's quite impressive, Elle. Quite impressive, I will say that vixen howl of laughter, it really was.
Absolutely.
Very impressive.
What can I say? You know, we never know, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, when we're doing a show, that all of a sudden someone has said something, one of the panellists, and we just bawl about it, Fritz. It's so funny, because we know that you're listening in to us, guys, so you might be scratching your head going, what are they laughing at? Because sometimes you get these flatulent jokes and you just fall about laughing, you know. It is so funny, isn't it, guys?
We're such rat boys.
You can just imagine them sitting there hunched over their earphones at GCHQ listening to the show. And I say, I think he's using code words. He was just talking about 150-mile-an-hour killer winds. And then they all started laughing. I think it's a code word. You can just imagine it, can't you?
They cannot see our evil grins, though.
Yes, that's right.
Well, anyway, if that's the case, what Tommy says, we got 150-mile-an-hour killer winds on the way. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening and you are in the UK, you know, be aware that we have got some severe weather coming our way. I remember the last time they mentioned something like that.
I like to be null.
Well, don't forget, Tommy, the last time we had really, when they started threatening big, you know, a weather storm, our electricity, well, we didn't have no electricity for 4 days. That wasn't that long ago. So it does seem to be that we're all experiencing some very severe weather this over the last year or so, haven't we? I don't know what it is, weather patterns, whatever it is. But it's very worrying at the same time. I mean, people living down, anybody's listening into the show, you've probably been seeing the pictures and on the TV of places like Devon underwater, and you've seen environmental secretary under attack, and, you know, this, that and the other, what they're going to do. So, you know, there's a big crisis going on in this country where the weather's concerned, with the flooding. It's been absolutely devastating. And anybody, you've got to be living on the moon if you haven't seen some of the pictures coming in from it. It's quite harrowing for people who live in them areas, isn't it, Tommy and Tim and Kel? You know, they don't know when, you know, they got these dredging things, machines at work, aren't they, guys? But when they get more rain coming through, the ground's so soaking that it just automatically, it floods once again.
The problem we have in this country is we just don't get this severe weather sufficiently often for people to take the proper precautions, because we generally have quite temperate weather. And then every now and again, we'll get a really severe snowstorm or a really severe flood. And because we're not properly prepared with flood barriers or with the proper machines to clear the roads, everything either comes to a halt or gets under about 6 foot of water. Whereas if we were subject to this sort of thing more regularly, you know, we would be taking precautions. I mean, it might seem an obvious thing to say, but you look in parts of the world where they get flooded regularly, in the Far East, for example, where this sort of thing happens regularly, they don't make a big fuss about it. They just put all their houses on 10-foot stilts, you know, and they think nothing about it. But, of course, because it happens so infrequently here, we don't bother putting our houses on stilts, and then we complain when there's a flood. But, it's a real pain in the time.
I've just noticed Eric Carr, he made a comment there, which has made me chuckle a bit. And it's good to see you this evening, Eric, as well. Hopefully, he's saying, it will stop the Muslims coming here, Jeff. They might think Allah is punishing us as their way.
Yeah, the problem is that when you get some of these severe weather things, they think quite the opposite. They think it's the result of not having enough Islam, so they redouble their efforts in order to keep the bad weather away. I mean, that's what happened in Indonesia, I think, in 2004 when they had that huge tsunami. There were plenty of places around Indonesia that were decimated, but one particular place, which known for being a hotbed of Muslim radicalism, which I think was Aceh or Aceh. I'm not sure if it's Aceh that you pronounce it, but in Indonesia, they were very, very badly hit. But when they recovered and got back on their feet, it wasn't long before somebody had the bright idea of saying, this tsunami hit us because we weren't Islamic enough, we weren't following Allah's word enough. And instead of the rest of the population saying, don't be so bloody stupid, they all followed suit, and now they're as devout and as more religious than the surrounding areas, you know, much more religious than they ever were, and obviously hoping that it's going to do them some good in the future. You know, never mind plate tectonics and climate conditions that are endemic in that part of the world. It's all to do with not having enough Allah. And
I don't mind interject here, because Agatha has put a little comment in the chat. He said, the quake that caused the tsunami actually caused the earth to wobble on its axis. So there you go, that's a bit of knowledge there. I didn't know that it's so severe that it caused it to wobble.
Affected an enormous part of the globe. I think the waves at the time, they travelled all thousands of miles, and you know, even a day or two later, huge waves were washing up on the east coast of Africa and places which I think were at least 10,000 miles away from where the original tsunami or the original earthquake took place. Yeah, it was enormous thing. But I mean,
it was amazing. Most of us, Tim and Tommy and Kel, saw those pictures. Some people was maybe in the hotel rooms and they see this wave coming and people running because they knew it was very going to be very nasty. And then you see it wash through. It was just absolutely amazing pictures that people actually caught. But the devastation was just astronomical, wasn't it? You know, no one could believe. Was it over 250,000 people died in that? Was it something like that, Tim?
Well, you're right. I mean, people look at that, something like that, and they think, well, that's an absolutely devastating thing, which it obviously is for the people involved, but it's by no means in terms of natural disasters that have happened in the last couple of hundred years, it's by no means the biggest when you're looking at earthquakes. I think there was an enormous one in China, I think it was less than 100 years ago, and it killed well over 1 million people. We didn't have the communications then that we do now, so the word didn't get around quite so quickly at the time, but it was enormous, and these things do happen all the time, and especially in that particular part of the world because of the plate tectonics, which is a geological phenomenon which guarantees that sort of thing is going to happen again, and it doesn't matter what Allah thinks about it, it's definitely going to happen.
Eric Carr was just said yes, Jeff, about 300,000 people. I estimated it to be about 250, you know, as an estimate, but Eric's just said about 300,000 5,000. That's a lot of people, isn't it, to get just wiped out. But I'll tell you what, guys, what we're talking about, I was talking to Kel just as we was waiting to go to air. We was talking about a story. We didn't want to speculate too much, but Kel, would you like to share the story that's been going around in Canada at this moment? Because I've just had an update on it, and I think it's only right that Kel makes a mention of what's happened in Canada. It's been a lot of speculation exactly what happened. So I'm going to pass the mic over to you, Kel. Would you like to explain to the listeners and the chat room?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes. Today in Canada, in Montreal, yeah, the province of Quebec, we had a rather tragic event in which a woman was riding the escalator and her scarf, it dropped and it caught, and she bent to pick up her scarf to retrieve it, and her hair got caught. And fortunately, she strangled to death and she died. But I was reading this account, and believe me, my heart goes out to her family because this is a tragedy. She's in her 30s. But what is really bothering me is the mixed reportage of this. Some news media outlets are reporting that it was a scarf, and now there are reports coming out that it was actually a hijab. So.
Yeah.
I don't know, all the same. If it was indeed a hijab, then why the cover-up? Are they afraid to let us know that she was indeed a Muslim and she was wearing the hijab in the province of Quebec, where we know the value clause is trying to be implemented, and that is the family values clause. So I don't know what's going on here, but all the same, it's a tragedy. It's sad, but I'm not too keen on the reportage. I don't like, if it was indeed a hijab, why are they afraid to say it was so?
Well, is it due to, and I think Tim would probably echo my sentiments, cultural sensitivities? Because if it's been a hijab that's been caught in the escalator, it's a poor lady.
Well,
I
don't know that we want to read too much into that story, Jeff.
No.
I'm just having a look at the various reports, and certainly the Toronto Sun. The Toronto Sun seems to think that it was a hijab rather than a scarf. But I don't know if you could really draw
the
any
Toronto
real,
Sun
real conclusions.
And we
didn't know where to
sorry. It's not just the Toronto Sun. There's various publications out there.
Oh, okay. I was googling it, and BBC just said a scarf, and one or two other places I was looking at said scarf specifically, and well, I don't know what to say. I mean, even if it turned out to be a hijab, I don't know that I would really want to draw any conclusions from it, because
I don't want to speculate either.
Yeah.
I think the point that I'm actually trying to bring up is that if there's a case in which there was a garment of clothing involved that involved a certain religion, and that the mainstream media would not want to expand on that, it brings about a larger question to me, in that are we that afraid to single out the Muslim if they're involved in anything that is newsworthy? Of course, this certainly is, and like I say, my heart goes out to her family, and I feel very, very sorry for this lady. This should not have happened. That's a terrible way to die. But it does bring out a larger question, what the media reports and what they don't
report.
Yeah,
why is it so mixed reporting? It's another thing, isn't it, Kel, you've got quite a few outlets saying it was a scarf or whatever, and a few others saying it was a hijab or whatever. So it's what we was talking about just before we come to air, guys. Didn't speculate too much. We wasn't going to cover too much ground on it, but it's only right that it hasn't mentioned, because it did happen in Canada, where our Kel lives. So,
yeah.
Of course, it's newsworthy that we do discuss it. We mustn't speculate too much. And it's absolutely a tragedy.
I think with anything like this, they're always going to be confused news reports right at the start. I notice it wasn't just that aspect. There was one report that says she was in her 30s. There's another report that specifically says she was 48. So there's all sorts of things which probably aren't going to become clear for a couple of days. But, I mean, that's the nature of news reporting, is that very, very rarely do all the news outlets agree on the facts. So I don't know. I'm just a little reluctant to sort of comment further on it. Really. But I mean,
I don't want to comment further on this particular story. But I thought I'd use it as a template to ask the panel a question. Do Muslims get special dispensation within the news media? Do you think? I suppose.
Well, I would say the answer to that is yes, they do. If I were looking at this story, I wouldn't necessarily say that would be a good example, but there are certainly cases in just about every Western country most days of the week where you can look at news reports where it's generally if they have done something which they shouldn't, and then you find the media falling all over themselves to not identify them as Muslim. That's the usual thing. They're either identified as Asian, or simply a man or a woman, which gives no clue to whether or not their political ideology is relevant to what's happened. But you know, when you get something like this, I mean, it could just have been I'm sure it was, from what's been reported, just a tragic accident, and there's no reason that I could see for the media to take a bias one way or another. But there certainly is a bias, I'm absolutely sure about that, which has been around for probably the last 10 or 15 years, ever since it was decided that these poor Muslims were getting bad publicity and that's why we all hated them so much. That's the narrative that the news, the media outlets say. These poor Muslims are the victims of discrimination by racist, bigoted Islamophobes, and therefore we must treat them with kid gloves. I mean, we have that all the time. Well,
Agador, is that more me interjecting? I've just got make a comment from Agador, and it's good to see you this evening as well in the chat room. And he's saying, as soon as there's a terrorist attack and it's Muslims involved, and the media rushes in to say, it's not all Muslims. And how true, and that's what you was commenting on yourself just then, Tim, and that was a good comment by Agador in the chat room. And I think we're all in agreement with that as well, Tim. That we're not just that with the media, we see that with our own politicians. You know, there's two guys that are butchered a British soldier on the streets, and the following day you've got David Cameron Looney standing there saying it's got nothing to do with Islam, and same with Boris the dickhead of Johnson saying exactly the same thing.
I remember talking about Canada. One of the things I was discussing with Kel last week is the dire state of the legal system in Canada, and in particular the human rights tribunals, where if you're deemed to be the slightest bit biased in print against Muslims, you can really be taken to task for it in a completely disproportionate way. Isn't that right, Kel? I'm thinking about some of the things that... was it Ezra Levant's magazine that got hauled over the coals because of some fairly innocuous articles that he published?
Oh, what happened, Ezra Levant, his magazine was called the Western Standard, and he had published something about... let me see if I can bring that up, and just give me a minute here. He had published the Danish cartoons. My apologies. Actually, I should have known that right off the top of my head, but I do. I haven't even gotten to it. But yeah, he published the Danish cartoons, and a bunch of university students did not like that, and they took him to the Human Rights Tribunal under the Section 13 of the Human Rights Commission Clause, and they essentially were successful in shutting down his magazine, the Western Standard, is no longer, because it cost him a fortune to, it took him 2 years to battle these Muslims and his defense of free speech in Canada, which it, unfortunately we do not have free speech in Canada. We have freedom of expression. We don't have the First Amendment like they do in the United States, for example. We can't walk around saying anything we want, although personally I think we should be able to. But all the same, he published these cartoons, and he was taken to a human rights tribunal where it was deemed that he had indeed offended a minority religious group and an entire community in Canada. So,
yeah, I've also, if you don't mind me just mentioning as well, Agudo's made another quite interesting comment there, and I was wondering if the panel would like a comment on it. He's saying, isn't it time for Christians and Jewish people to start using these tribunals against Muslims who harass them? I think that's a very fair comment, and I'd like to hear what the panel's got to say about that. Thank you very much for that, Agudor.
The problem is, of course, I can just imagine that if Christians and Jews tried to use these tribunals in the way that Muslims use them successfully, they would be, you know, told to go away and stop wasting their time, because it's only when Muslims make complaints that people jump to attention and go straight into dimitude and appeasement mode in order to give them what they want, because it makes them feel good and polishes their left-wing credentials in a way that it wouldn't if they were trying to help Christians and Jews. But there you go, that's just me being bitter and twisted.
I just want to make a comment. Dodgy Dave just saying, he said, I've heard that 99% of the magistrates in Birmingham are Islamists. So it's just a comment that Dave's making. I don't know if that warms your heart or what, Tim, but
it warms my heart, definitely. And as Eric Kyler says, that's Tim. he says he'll get 10 years. Eric Carl says, well, I mean, it's entirely possible, of course. That's one of the things about having a trial in a place like Birmingham. In fact, somebody did actually mention to me that I would have been better advised going for a Crown Court trial than a trial in a magistrate's court. When all this business came up, I had the option to do it, and I didn't really know what was going to be the best course of action. And my solicitor said that you would be better off going to a magistrate's court rather than the Crown Court. And if it all goes horribly wrong, you can always appeal it to a Crown Court. So I thought, well, okay, that seems reasonable. But somebody made the point that if you have a Crown Court, then you have a judge and a jury made up of 12 good men and true. And I thought, 12 good men and true in Birmingham, you'll be lucky. Trying to find 12 good men and true. I mean, I might be maligning the people of Birmingham there, but I think I'll stick with the magistrates' court for the time being and see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tim, Carol just mentioned that I should have asked for each one of our panelists' comments on the comment that Agudor made, time for the Christians and Jewish people to start using these tribunals against Muslims who harass them. So I was wondering if I could pass that over to Kel next. Your thoughts on this, what Agudor's mentioned in the chat room, Kel?
Well, I think that Agudor has a very valid point. These Islamic groups are constantly harassing. They're harassing our Canadian government right now. In fact, the NCCN, which is the National, what are they called? What is the acronym? Because they just changed it. They used to be CARE Canada.
Oh,
it's
NCCN,
now known as the National,
isn't it?
National Council of Canadian Muslims. Yeah, these things jump in my head pretty quick. But they harass these politicians, they harass private citizens, journalists like Ezra Levant, and the Canadian Arab Federation. It's these groups, and the Muslims back them up. They are nothing but hate mongers in that they try to make us look like we're the hate mongers, in which we're not. We're stating fact. We only engage in statement of fact, in which Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper, his spokesperson, engaged in, and that was Jason McDonald. When NCCM were critical of a certain rabbi attending the entourage with Stephen Harper on his trip to Israel, they were highly critical of that, and they went public with it. Now, we have to remember this. They didn't just send a letter. They went public and said, we disapprove of this rabbi. And that is because, in particular, this rabbi had attended attended a conference with Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer when they were in Canada, and they were highly critical of this. And when Jason McDonald said, look, we don't take marching orders from a group that has known ties to the outlawed political entity known as Hamas, well, they took umbrage to that, and they were saying, look, we want a formal apology because you can't prove anything like that. Well, yeah, we can, because there is fact that the U.S. Care Division was listed as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, and that was essentially, that was the largest money laundering case that the United States had seen. Now, let's go back to Care Canada, who changed their name because to the National Council of Canadian Muslims, because they wanted to disassociate themselves even further from their mother group. But we know that they take the same orders from Care United States. You can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And
yeah,
there you go.
Well said, Kel. And finally, Tommy, your comment on what Agador said as well. How do you feel about that comment that Agador made? Over to you, bro.
Well, I'm just saying the same thing over again. But yeah, I will be honest, I was a bit caught out there. I was just looking out the window because there was a gang of you know who's doing.
My co-host is looking out the window.
But I've got to be honest with you guys, there is a gang of you know who's doing you know what.
What, the cultural sensitivity people out there?
Yeah, the cultural sensitivity people are outside. They're on the bikes as well, so I'm trying to keep on Mrs. Potter's house, which I've got to try out.
Oh, yeah, I know. You've mentioned it. Ladies and gentlemen, where Tommy lives, I mean, certain people do get harassed by these Muslim little mobs. Tommy keeps an eye on his neighbours. There's some elderly neighbours that they tend to pick up. I'm all right, Tom. I'm not making any rash statements.
Bless her. She lives on her own, and all the kids are scattered across the country and the world. She's all on her own, bless her.
The actual comment that Agador said was he can't understand why the Christians and the Jewish people don't take to going to these tribunals and complaining about the Muslims who harass them. Tim made a statement about it, and Kel did, and I was waiting for you to make a statement. So
yeah, it's all biased, isn't it? There's nothing more protected in this country than Islam. If anything is perceived as anti-Islamic, then people are going to get given this horrible racist stamp on the forehead. That's just how it works in this country. We've done it before. We've done it when basically when they had those Nazi sympathisers in the 30s, they were protected by the government because they've got their rights to do what they want to do. It was the socialists in the 1920s. We've always protected those who have been out to destroy us and destroy this country. You would have thought the mistakes of 1939 would have basically woken the country up, but no. It still keeps getting done.
The thing about it, Tom, would you not agree? It seems like these Muslims are quick at going to tribunals and complain about other people that the Christian people out there and the Jewish parts of our community shouldn't be afforded the same respect if when they go to these tribunals to make a complaint about being harassed by Muslims. It does seem that there's a two-tier system at work in this country, not just towards where the law is concerned, but in lots of different aspects as well. And I was wondering if the panel would not agree with that statement that I made there.
Well, I certainly would. And I think it's been quite obvious to everybody who's paying attention that the two-tier system is becoming so skewed in favour of all things Islamic that it can't go on for any longer. If we're going to be a country where nominally everybody should be treated the same way under the law, and I would say that's the country I thought I was living in until maybe 15, 20 years ago, you cannot continue to treat one particular group as a protected species. But yes, you're absolutely right, Jeff. What do you think about that, Kel?
Well, I want to go right back to what Agador's comment was saying, and I was just, what I was doing is I was Googling another story, and I was talking about how the Council of American Relations Canada, a.k.a. the National Council of Canadian Muslims, and I'm sorry, I take umbrage to the word Canadian being included in there. But I related that story. But, of course, we also had another story a few years back where there was an incident with Khaled Mumer, and he is the leader of the Canadian Arab Federation, and he called then-Immigration Minister Jason Kenney. He called Prime Minister Stephen Harper. He called Peter Kent and others professional whores for supporting Israel. And this is after Kenny criticized the presence of Hezbollah and Hamas flags at an anti-Israel rally in Toronto. And this is the Al-Quds rally that goes on every year. And Kenny made a comment about that. Khaled Mumer made a comment that he was a professional whore. And guess what? Bob's your uncle. Canadian Arab Federation lost their funding, federal funding, because you don't bite the hand of the owner, as it were. And I think in this case too that I related with the National Council of Canadian Muslims that the federal government should countersue. That I don't think Stephen Harper is one that will go hat in hand and offer an apology, not by a long shot. He'll just say, you know, bring it on. And if it does go to court, whether or not it's going to be heard, I think that the federal government should countersue, and I think citizens of Canada should be outraged because this is our tax dollars being spent on frivolous lawsuits. This is enough. Agador is right. It's time we started turning this around and go after the Muslims for harassment. This is nothing but legal harassment.
Exactly. I would agree with that, Kel. And actually, while we've been chatting about this, and I know a lot of people are so pissed off, let's use it once tonight, pissed off with the situation. I've got a tune, especially for all of us that stand up against these things that's so wrong. And I'm going to just play it, and you know exactly what it is, guys. And it just goes along with what we've been just discussing. So here we go. Hope you enjoy it.
So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
We're not going to take it!
Yeah.
Well, I think that sums it up. It's just as we was talking, and I was going down the list, and I thought, you know what, this will just sum up what the first part of the show we've been discussing this evening. So I hope you enjoyed it, guys. So with that, I'm going to pass it back to Kel. I think we've got another story that we was wanting to discuss tonight, but I can't remember now what we talked about before we went to where. Or was it just one story? Kel, what else we got we want to talk about this evening? I know we got to talk about the demonstration Saturday, definitely.
It's not the formation of the Alzheimer's division of the EDL, is it, by any chance, Jeff?
Don't you bloody start, Tim.
Oh, I'm so cruel. Oh, smack my wrist.
Yes, very hard.
No,
with a wet lettuce.
Something a lot more cruel than that, Tim. Somebody take his name.
Oh no. No, please.
Tim's used to have his name taken.
Well, I was going to say, maybe I could take him back to the corporal punishment and chuck some board rubbers at him. As my grandfather said, he often had a bar rubber chucked at the back of his head.
Yes. Well, after that, the trouble was the teachers didn't have very good eyesight when I was at school, and the same as you probably, Tim. The teacher used to get a bit irate because she was talking or whatever during the art lesson. Normally we find it used to get rather irate. Art teachers are very hypersensitive, aren't they? Before you know it, you've got a blackboard rubber whizzing past your ear, and he never hit me once. Or was it someone else it did, Tim?
Go on then, Tim. When did you ever get the whack?
I do have some news here. I know, everything went so quiet for a second there, but I was just putting in the chat room that the surviving brother of the Boston Marathon bombings, that the courts have decided to go ahead and pursue the death penalty if he is convicted, and his case will be going to trial. He has pled not guilty to the offense of killing 3 people and injuring over 250 others. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, just I hope that the sentence is the death sentence for him, because they don't deserve any better than that. There's a lot of people that were very severely injured, young children killed, other people arms, legs blown off, wasn't it? Ask for the death penalty. Let's just hope that does go that way. And it doesn't matter about him saying, oh, he'd be a martyr if that happens. Well, let him be a martyr then. What they did was totally despicable. The same with the people that done that, the 7/7 bombings and whatever, people like that. There should be the ultimate sentence for people like that. I'm not a one for holding back on capital punishment on these people, Kel, I must admit. I've never have been, because it was so horrific. Some of the injuries, some of the stories, the harrowing stories that come out after these events, and then you get courts talking out, I would give them a life sentence. Well, they should really try to make the punishment, like what the actual crime was in that sense. That's my own personal opinion. I probably know there's a lot of people out there probably do not agree with what I say, but as I say, we've all got our own opinions on these issues, haven't we, Kel?
Oh, absolutely. And in reading the chat room, everybody is in agreement with you, Jeff, and I certainly am myself. If he wants to die a martyr, and he's got quite a surprise, because he's not going to heaven. He's going to hell. He's going to hell. Yeah. He's not abiding by the golden rule or anything like that. What he did is irrehensible.
He took the lives of our
innocent
people.
He maimed all these people. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Let him fry in the electric chair. Let him do that because a lot of people say, well, you know what, wouldn't it be perfect if we put him in protected custody in prison and left him in solitary confinement for the rest of his natural life? But maybe it would drive him crazy, but you know what? These are people who are put in protected custody, like these serial killers or mass murderers or so on and so forth. When they're put in protected custody, they get TVs.
Can I just rudely interject here for 2 seconds, guys? I'm just going to have to bob up a second because this group's starting to proceed down to Mrs. Potter's garden. I'm just going to sit in the front garden for a bit, if that's okay, but I'll come back on.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Lynch. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I won't be told, so sorry I interrupted you there, because I didn't think I was going to drop off without saying something.
No, that's okay, Tommy. As I say, Tommy, he does look after, ladies and gentlemen, if you're wondering why Tommy's happened to sort of leave the studio, as he said, there's a group of these Muslims out there who tend
these
to
cultural irrational sensitivities.
There you go, cultural sensitivity people. As we know, we call them what they are. They're bloody Muslims, right? All this crap, this...
no, Jeff, Don't say that, they're Asian.
Yeah, well, I will say who they are. They're bloody Muslims, that's it. I'll say it as I feel it. As you know, Tommy, and most people listening to this show knows that this isn't a politically correct area to be in. If you want to, stay tuned to a politically correct program, so they shouldn't be listening to this show, should they, guys? Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we don't adhere to.
What we tell me about 10 minutes? Is that okay, guys?
Yeah, okay, Tommy. You can do what you've got to do, brother.
What we do,
But, as I say, what was I going to say?
I was just going to wrap up my point and then pass the mic back to you, Jeff, so you could pass it around. And the point being...
Yeah, I was going to say, Kel, if I pass it to you, while you're discussing, you're wrapping up a point, I'll just call back in, okay, Kel? So could you just
absolutely, Jeff.
For me, Kel.
No,
I just noticed
problem.
The time. Okay, guys, I'll be back after a quick break. I'll be straight back with that, Kel. I'll pass it back to you for that point you wanted to wrap up. Okay, thank you, Kel.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, in reading the chat room, and Agador is absolutely right. I was talking about the debate that people have: should we let him rot in hell forever, or in solitary confinement? But we know what happens when they're put in protected custody, when they're imprisoned for the rest of their natural lives, is that they get TVs. And we have a character here in Europe who has a Nintendo player or whatever those things are called, those games that kids like to play, the young kids like to play. They have all the comforts, the creature comforts. So why on earth should the average taxpayer pay to keep this piece of scum alive? Why should we be paying through our taxes to give him his 3 squares and his cable TV and his newspapers that he would most likely demand to get? Why? Why, Tim, what do you think we should? Uh-oh. I think I've lost everybody.
No, I'm back,
okay.
Carol. And I'm not sure whether Tim was having a...
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you're
no,
there, Tim. Sorry,
no,
we listened a bit quiet there, bro.
Oh, sorry about that. I don't know. I think it might be my microphone. I'm going to, at the end of this show, I'm going to change my headset and microphone because I've had trouble with this all week.
Okay.
What I was going to say in answer to Kel was... I think there's two answers to this question. One is it depends on whether the person in question who's locked up is ever likely to be released again. If you're talking about a mass murderer who is never going to be released, well, I personally think we would be more merciful in some ways by going through with capital punishment. Now, a lot of people are going to disagree with me on that, and they're going to say, well, it's not up to us to play God. But I think there's more to it than that. I think if we're plagued by people who think that they're going to get rewards of various types for killing us infidels, then we must make it quite plain to them that if they are sentenced, they are not going to live the rest of their natural lives being cosseted. And somebody, I think it might have been Eric Kyle, said we ought to make sure that they understand that what's going to happen is if they're put in front of a firing squad with bullets covered in pig grease or something like that, and buried in a a hole in the ground full of pigs' heads, and that is made clear, you know, maybe graphically clear to some people who are thinking of doing exactly the same thing, I think that would be a far better thing to do. The other thing I was going to say was that if you plan on releasing some of these people back into the community at some point in the future, then far from cosseting them and giving them copies of the Quran and everything, you should go to great lengths to deprogram them so that by the time they are ready for release back into the community, they have completely lost all taste for Islam if the deprogramming is effective. I mean, I know it's very difficult to say whether such deprogramming would be 100% effective, but I think we owe it to our communities to try.
So if they're
going to be released back into the community, let's have some focus on that. Never mind looking after them with Nintendos and PS3s and all these games. Any spare time that they've got, it's not for me to say what form this deprogramming should take, but you certainly shouldn't be giving them copies of the Quran and allowing them to associate with other Muslims who are just going to reinforce the mental patterns that have led to them being locked up in the first place. You should be going out of your way to deprogram them and hopefully turn them into constructive members of the community for ultimate release. Now, that might sound very idealistic, and I'm sure a lot of people will say, well, that'll never work, and maybe it won't. But I would certainly give it a try, because what we're doing at the moment is just filling up our prisons with people, because going to prison is seen like a very soft option. And I suppose somebody like me shouldn't really be saying this, because somebody will say, you know, you want to be careful what you wish for, mate, because I'm likely, or I'm quite possibly going to be spending some time at Her Majesty's pleasure, you know, within the next 30 days. So I shouldn't really be arguing so vehemently in favour of this, but I do, you know, I think our prisons are too lenient.
No, but you're a man of principles, Tim, and will stand your ground and seize your freedom.
Well, yeah, that's right. I know it's you have to look at the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is we have a major problem with Muslim criminality, and if we catch a Muslim and we find he's being criminal because he's a Muslim, or that's contributed to his criminality, which it often does, then we should take every opportunity to deprogram him while he's in prison, and maybe even make that a condition of his release. You know, unless we're satisfied with the fact that you've thoroughly renounced Islam and taken up something constructive like knitting or something like that, you know, we shouldn't be even thinking about releasing them. But for people who are never likely to be released into the community ever again, I think we should be making an example of them in a way that will really deter people from, or at least make them think twice about what they do, make them realise that if they're caught after committing these atrocities, they're going to be executed in a way that defiles them, so that they're going to be unable to enter paradise. I think that would be a good long-term strategy for the survival of our civilization, if nothing else. Now, people might take issue with that, but I don't care.
I mean to say, I would agree with most everything you said there, Tim. I'm in the same. I can say that the things that what's in place at this moment in time is not working. And that these people, you know, if they're released into our community, who's to say that they won't go back to planning to maybe do some more, you know, trying to bomb other people and then cause as much trouble as they possibly can. You do need a deterrent, a very strong deterrent of these people. And, that, you know, trying to recondition them
I think it's going to be very difficult because these have been brainwashed. It means slowly. You know the way that it takes over the whole of their being, as though they've been possessed. It's not just deconditioning them. These people are like being possessed by this book of theirs, this book of evil. And that does seem, because I've got to say, going back a couple of years ago now, when I was in discussion with a couple of people, someone who's quite knowledgeable, and talking about, there's been quite a few, I don't know about the statistics, but there was quite a few, what they call it, exorcisms with these Muslim people, you know, being possessed and that. So I always say that it's a book of evil, and you know, written by a very evil. You know, the whole thing about it is totally evil. I always will stand to that. But what's that? There's a couple of points there. Maybe I know I've got a call. I'm going to take a caller in a minute, and I haven't read a number tonight. But if you're a Skype user. You're also a Blog Talk Radio user, if you left-click on the Skype button, follow the prompts, and when they say, do you want to speak to the host or do you want to listen to the show, you'll press 1 on whatever device that you're on. If you're on none of the devices and you want to call into the show, the number to call in is 001, if you're outside the USA, 858-777-5934. Repeat, 001-858-777-5934. And with that, we've got Tommy back, I think. But we've got a call.
Well, you do have a caller, and he's been waiting quite a while.
Okay, yes, I've had a call. He's been waiting for a little while. So with that, I'm bringing a call. I think I know it is. I think it's you, isn't it, Frank? I think so. Good evening.
Evening, all. Yeah, evening, Jeff.
Hi, Frank.
Yeah, good to be back. I've been listening, but I ain't had a lot to say lately because I thought I was going over the top now again. But anyway, it's good to join in, and I wanted to join in where Tim left off about the imprisonment and all that. The death sentence. The only thing I've got any reservations, and I think most people have, is it's easy to get caught up in hysteria and vengeance, and then you end up bumping the wrong bloke off because he's been framed up. You know, there's so many innocent people do get framed up because they just.
But would you not say though that Frank, I've got to just interject just a little bit there. Do you not think though, Frank, because of the DNA that we've got now, that these people, if they've been found guilty and there's DNA to prove the evidence there that they was the murderers of, or mass murderers, whatever they are, do you not think then that makes it more unlikely for people to be found guilty who was innocent and to be, say, put to the death sentence? Don't you think that we live in a day and technology now that these people will be found guilty without a shadow of doubt, with the trial and all that, that you know that will be the right person because of the DNA? It'd be so stringent that it'd be without a shadow of doubt that these people are guilty of the crime and should be, if there's capital punishment, then they should, go that way. So there you go. That's something I want to throw up to you.
Fair days, mate. I understand that, but if it just comes down to DNA and all that, then life sentence, and life sentence and live it. We're going to have to put up with you and feed you, but we're not going to cater for you. You life sentence and live it. If you're innocent, you spend your time. Spend your time thinking about it and trying to prove it, and you'll have friends if you're genuinely innocent. So but if I mean, like this bloody Adji Dave Bajo fella that's done it, those two, and he's appealing now. This is ridiculous. He doesn't.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
I'm not saying it's a waste.
The thing about it is, Frank, that he would be, if there's any legal thing, he's going to go down that path. Well, it's,
And he's not going to change his mind, and it's not worth feeding. Yeah, so he's not going to change his mind. It's obvious. It's not. He's not worth feeding. You can train a pig. Hollywood's proved it. You can train a pig, but you can't educate pork. The man's dead already. Why feed
him? That's fast.
Well, that's it. Isn't it? I mean, that's it. Just get rid of the bugger and do what Tim says. Bury him with a pig's head. Make a big superstitious hoo-ha out of it. Frighten the bejesus out of all the superstitious idiots. That's it. End of story. We don't have to buy into that crap, but if that's your values, you come and cut a dose of your own.
Yeah. I think, actually, what a deterrent that would be for those would be terrorists that would do these crimes, that they would realise that if they got found and they didn't blow themselves up or whatever, and they had to go to trial and there would be a capital punishment, that they would be buried, or there would be, a firing squad that they know that.
We're going to go out of our way to accommodate them, and if they attack us, we are going to make it worth. We're going to do whatever we need to do to prove it. It's not going to be worth your while. You're going to get buried in pig's head.
Yeah.
End of story. If you are still superstitious and you think that's going to stop you from going to bloody paradise, then stop doing it.
Yeah,
end
exactly. I think Tim would agree with.
Otherwise, just bump the bugger off. I mean, I'm not saying it's a waste of money, this fella appealing, because all them lawyers, they'll have something else to nitpick about, and they won't be short. If they're not doing that, they'll be doing something else to suck the teeth. At least it keeps it
I was going to pass it back Tim, because I know Tim wanted to comment on what you're saying there. So just hold on a minute, Frank. And Tim, I think you're in agreement with what Frank said there. And
I am, surprisingly enough. I mean, I'm quite sure that if I put forward these views at, say, some liberal dinner party table, I'd be thrown out of the room. But nevertheless, my argument is based on the fact that we are treating these people with kid gloves at the moment. We're appeasing them at every turn, and the thinking seems to be that if we appease them, it's like the crocodile. If we appease them, and maybe he'll eat us last. But I think it's obviously not working, because the more we appease them, the more they become emboldened. And therefore, if we do take some really, really strong measures to make them understand that their antics based on Islamic doctrine are not acceptable in a civilised society, they're going to be shocked by it. They're going to organise a few protests. I'm quite sure that they're not going to take it lying down to start with, but when they realise that Islam is unwelcome in this country, and that any antisocial or criminal activities that could be construed as being carried out by Islam will be treated in the harshest possible way, then we will start seeing less of this problem. It's like I was saying when I first started to learn about working in business, and the same is true in any field of human endeavour. What gets rewarded gets done, and at the moment what Muslims are doing in the name of Islam is getting rewarded by the appeasement and dimitude of the political elites and the mainstream media, who are supposed to be looking after the rest of us and failing at that job miserably. So I say, let's take some really strong measures, even though they disgust the liberal elite, shoot a few of them, bury them with some pig's heads, make it absolutely known that that's going to be the penalty for people who park on the wrong side of the street while being Muslim, and make sure that they understand that Islam is no longer welcome in this country.
Well, well, what can I say? I'm going to pass it over to Kel as well, because you know, Kel, she lives in Canada, but I think I know what she's going to say. Kel, your thoughts on what we've been discussing about the about capital punishment for these people, and what we should do to deter them for carrying out these acts of violence.
Well, I like that, what Tim was discussing about deprogramming them, for one. It reminded me of that movie, A Clockwork Orange. And one thing that we also have to be very careful of is that we are dealing with the radicalization in the West. And it's not only the homegrown terrorists. It's those ones that go over to fight jihad. And if they survive the violent jihadist battle, they come back to the host countries, whether that be in Canada, the United States, or in Europe, and they are so more fully radicalized. We have to do something about the mosques. The mosques and the madrasas are a big problem, but when they do create these violent jihad, I think that they should be put out of their misery. I'm sorry. I do not see jihad as compassionate human beings, for one. They are subcore animals, in my opinion, and they should
soulless,
be put down like a rabid dog.
Soulless, Kel. That's the word, is it? Soulless, without soul.
Well, you know what? F. Scott Fitzgerald, he once said that in the hearts of men, sometimes it's always 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think that applies here. It's always 3 o'clock in the morning in their souls, and that there is no redemption. I don't think their indoctrination and their commitment to the jihad and the Sharia, it is so embedded that I cannot see any reformation for these individuals. And I'm talking about the jihad. It's not Muslims. I'm talking about the jihad.
No. That's what we're talking about. We do know that there are Muslims out there who want to, you know, live in peace. But we, at the same time, you know, we all say, you know, you are maybe the people out there that would want to change things. But when they lift their heads above the precipice and they speak out against these people that's causing the problems, you'll find that they're silenced very quick. We've seen it on so many occasions, have we not, Tim? Over time, when people, we've got some Muslim who stands up, you think, good on you, mate, good on you. And before you know it, you hear the next part of the story is that his family's been threatened and he goes quiet. You don't hear no more about this person.
It is actually worse than that, depending on which part of the world he decides to stand up in and espouse those views. He could find that he's not only had his family threatened, he could find that, you know, he himself could be killed quite easily, certainly if he does that in a Muslim country. And even, I'm sure you've seen the furore this week with Majid Nawaz of the Quilliam Foundation. He posted a picture of the Jesus and Mo cartoons, and he was immediately taken to task by a whole bunch of Muslims, including one Mohammed Shafiq of the Ramadan Foundation, who appeared on Channel 4 to say, you can't just go around posting offensive cartoons. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, well, why not? You know, there is nothing wrong with being offensive in a democratic society. And Mohammed Shafiq's argument was that you can't be offensive. And he seems to be completely missing a point that being offensive is part of life. And in fact, there's an Arab phrase, which I may have repeated on this show before, and it goes that if you're offended, there's two things you can do. You can put on a pair of leather shoes, or you can demand that the whole world covers itself in leather. Well, this is precisely where we are with the Muslim community. I mean, you and I and all grown-up, sensible people who are not Muslims, and I'd say one implies the other.
I'm
really
proud.
Yes, and proud. Yes, non-Muslim and proud.
Yes.
Infidel and proud. We put leather shoes on our feet, and we grow a thick skin, and that's how we get through life. We don't worry too much if we're offended which we are frequently, I'm offended every day by what I see going on in the world with what I see Muslims doing in the name of Islam. But I put a pair of leather shoes on my feet, metaphorically speaking, and maybe Muslims should do the same. But that's why you don't
Yeah, but they're not like... Tim, I've got to say this. I mean, ideology, the mentality of these people are so different than what we, you know, expect from, you know, people with common sense and that. Their so-called religion, I'm not going to, I hate using that word where Islam's concerned.
Yeah,
their
ideology. Don't use it. I always,
direct,
I make
it ugly. The thing is about offence, is if you mean it, then you make it obvious. You mean offence. But if you're looking for it, then you can find it anywhere, you know? It's, you know, I'm getting at it.
Well, this is precisely
you can take offence at anything
where we are.
You choose. Yeah,
oh,
yeah, you can take
a... But this is precisely a take offence. They use it in a religious way to protect themselves as well, don't they, guys?
Anyway, can I go just say something about the conditioning in the prisons that Kel was saying earlier? The thing is, there's plenty of proof that it does work because there's a lot of people go in there for their own reasons and then they're got out by imams and all the others that are in there, all the Muslims that are in there, and they're caught at 3 o'clock in their morning. And it works, and the Muslims know it. That's why they look. That's why they go. Their biggest recruits are from jails and from people in a bad way, which they've created mostly. And you get them at 3 o'clock at the morning. If you want to enlighten somebody, you go meet them in the day, open. You don't catch him at three o'clock in the morning. Don't forget, going back a while ago now, Frank,
and you must remember this, Tim and Tom and Kel, that Theresa May actually made a mention, and I think the Prime Minister or something, but I know it's Theresa May, said that they're going to look into what's going on in the prisons, the way that the prisoners are being indoctrinated in the prisons these Muslims. So
that was all talk.
As we always say, the politicians, put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to say you're going to do something, do it. We haven't seen it working. All we can see is the same old, same old. And it's okay to them talking the talk, but they're not doing the walk. They're not making things happen in the prison system. And this is the breeding ground for the newest jihadists that we could have on our streets that was released onto the streets, couldn't it, guys? So that's what I mean. This should be a serious approach to the prison system where Islamisation is taking place. And I think we'd all agree with that. There's got to be a big shake-up totally with what's going on.
It shows how much they're aware of the situation we're in, really. It just illustrates. They say they're looking into it. We know there's no need to look into it. It's bloody obvious. What they mean when they say they're looking into it is they're trying to really find their way out of it. Out of the mess they've caused.
Yeah, and I've just got Eric saying to me, they won't do anything.
The only way they can get out of it now is quit, back off, keep the gob shut, and let us sort it. That's the only way the only chance they've got of getting out of this in one piece.
Frank, I've got to say, I'm looking in the chat because there's been some great comments being made, and Eric Kyle saying, they won't do anything, Jeff. That's why we need a Brit Spring. There you go. And that does make you think seriously that, what's the panelist's thoughts?
Before we go to Tommy, I'll explain Eric's comment after we come back from break.
Spot on, Eric.
Okay.
Back to Tommy.
Hello.
Hey, Tommy.
Yeah, I'll escalate quickly. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, mate, go on. You're okay.
Yep, okay. There is something I did want to do. I think I
mentioned it to you earlier when I rang you earlier, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah, hang on, I'm in another room, the signal's going. Oh, yep, is that any better?
Yeah, it's okay, Tom, I think we can hear you. Okay, I've got you okay this time, don't
worry. Have you all got me all okay?
Okay.
I think we can...
Go
ahead, Gil. What was good?
Did we lose Tommy? He's still on the line, but we can't hear him.
Well, yeah, I'm still here. I don't know if you can hear me. I'll okay.
Oh, okay.
Go on, Tommy. Go ahead. What was you going to say, bruv?
Right. What I did want to do is it's still not confirmed yet if I'm doing speech on Saturday. Oh, gosh, I didn't even mention it. EDL, if I can get it out of the system now.
There you go.
But I have made some small edits to my speech. I've been practicing it a hell of a lot. What I just want to do is give you another run through it, so you know what you think of all the little updates.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that, because you're breaking now and again, Tommy, but, Kel... I was going to say, Tommy, I did have a chat to Tommy earlier that he just wanted to do a quick rehearsal because, as I say, he's got his speech this Saturday and he just wanted to hear what we thought of it and, you know, our listeners as well. So hopefully, Tommy, you come through okay. But if you do break up in between, we will comment about it to let you know, brother, okay?
Yep. Are we all ready?
Yes, we are.
Ready.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Right.
Right on, Tommy. Right on.
I'm going to try and project it the way I plan to project it on Saturday, and you lot can let me know how I can, you know, make some small changes or things like that. So, greetings, infidels. It's great to see all these beautiful, patriotic faces once again. Once again, we travel far and wide to demonstrate the spread of radical Islamism as we launch our latest crusade of 2014, which starts right here in this beautiful city of Slough. And I'm here to speak to you today about something that this government and previous governors like to do in the face of the enemy, appeasement. So what is appeasement? Appeasement is a political context, is a diplomatic policy of making political or material concessions to a potential enemy power or powers in order to avoid a full-scale war. Is that coming across okay, guys?
Yes,
yeah.
That's quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Yeah, brilliant. And the policy of appeasement was founded in this country, which came in 1918, just after the horrors of the First World War came to light. Machine guns, artillery barrages and gas attacks. When the governments of Europe said this must never happen again. And for the first 10 years of the appeasement policy, it seemed to work. Appeasement stopped the war from breaking out between Finland and Sweden and many others. But in 1933, it all changed because Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany. And after World War I, Germany had strict rules put against them by the Allies, and Hitler torn down all those rules. In 1936, Hitler's forces reoccupied the Rhineland, and the Treaty of Versailles could put any armed force in that part of Germany because it violated the neutral pact between Germany and Belgium. But the British government, using the appeasement policy, said, and I quote, it's Germany's back garden. They have the right to put soldiers there. And this laid the foundation for the Second World War. In 1938, under the Anschluss policy, Germany annexed Austria. And once again, the British government said, technically they're of the same culture and language, so maybe unification of those nations isn't bad. Once again, fearing that Germany's territorial expansion would not stop, Neville Chamberlain met with Hitler in September of that year in hopes of appeasing him into stopping Germany's territorial expansion. But Hitler demanded the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia. So Neville Chamberlain said, if we give you the Sudetenland, do you promise to stop expanding your borders? To which Hitler did not give a yes or no answer. So Chamberlain returned to England, thinking he'd stopped the war from breaking out, went in front of the TV and said that we have promised that we will never go to war with each other again. And how wrong was he? World War II broke out exactly a year later because of that shameless, irrational act of appeasement, which cost the lives of over 50 million people in the space of 6 years. 2.5 million of them were British soldiers and civilians. Appeasement does not stop wars. It lays the groundwork for them. And today, this government is appeasing the Islamic fascists and fascists in the left-wing movements, appeasing them by helping to build mosques like here in Slough and many other towns and cities across this great nation, appeasing them by allowing them to rape and mutilate young white girls, appeasing them by allowing them to attack people of other religions and sexualities. Appeasement does not work. And we here in the EDL, we do not believe in appeasement. We do not believe in conceding territory to the enemy. We will not back down from a fight. We don't believe in surrendering an inch of this land to the Islamists, something our grandparents and great-grandparents did many generations before. They showed no surrender, so why should we? When one stops the rise of dictatorship, there is always going to be risks. But there are even greater risks in not stopping its rise. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Absolutely classic. Kel, could you, have you got a slap on me for there for Tommy? That's a great speech.
Yes, mate, can I just say, can I make one small suggestion there, Tom, please? That take the questions out of it. When you say our ancestors didn't, don't say why should we, just say we are not. There is no reason. It's no question about it. Why should we? It sounds
no,
like...
That's not the question, isn't it?
No, just,
there you go.
Please.
I was going to say, that's
when
a good,
say,
good point there, Tommy, that we're not conceding anything. What
we?
You said there, I'm impressed with that, Frank. I don't know about you. That's a great speech, Tommy. And if you could, that we're not... you know, what Frank said,
no.
You could just add to it a little bit like that. I think that will go down.
Why should we? We know why we should, and we're going to. We don't ask that question. This is not a little boy at school saying, well, why should I? This is a man saying, I bloody well am going to.
There you go. I was going to say, on that note there, Tommy and Tim and Kel and everybody, What I'm going to do is, because I'll just have a quick chat with Kel, I'm going to play the promo for Slough. I say it's coming up. It'll be next day or so, Tommy will be on the road, and many of our members will be in Slough. With that, this is, of course, our very own Mr. Martin, Martin Hive, with the promo. So here we go, guys. Hope you enjoy this.
EDL News. On the 1st of February, the English Defence League will be holding a peaceful protest in Slough to draw attention to the Council's decision to approve the building of a new Islamic centre in the area. The centre will be funded by a Muslim group who openly supported the murder of a Pakistani politician who was opposed to the country's blasphemy laws, a law where anyone who criticises Islam could face execution, which is common in many Muslim-majority countries. Even though local residents were opposed to the building of an Islamic centre funded by this group and drew up a petition against it, the project was still given the go-ahead by the local council. a resident who did not wish to give her name for fear of being attacked, said, "This is not just a local issue. All across the country, the British public's concerns are being ignored by local councils and MPs as more and more of these unregulated Islamic centres are being built against local residents' wishes." A spokesman for the English Defence League said that while mosques and Islamic centres all across the country continue to be unregulated by our government, there is always a risk that the teaching of verses from the Quran that call for the murder of non-Muslims, verses that the killers of Lee Rigby quoted after he was hacked to death on a London street, could be used to radicalize more and more Muslims and turn them into terrorists. The English Defence League will once again be holding a peaceful protest to draw the public's attention to these problems, just as we have held protests in the past against the epidemic of Muslim paedophile gangs and attacks on British troops. He also stated that contrary to what the mainstream media would have the British public believe, the English Defence League is not about race, and it is proud to have black, Asian, Jewish, gay, and all kinds of members. And if people visit our website, our Facebook pages, or watch our videos on YouTube, they will see this is true. The English Defence League exists because our politicians are unwilling to deal with these problems, so it has been left to people like us, ordinary men and women from all different backgrounds, to highlight these problems in the hope that something will be done. He also added that if anyone is concerned about Muslim terrorism, unregulated mosques, paedophile gangs, or any of the issues that our politicians seem unable to deal with, then you are welcome to come and join us in Slough on February the 1st, no matter who you are or where you come from.
And there you go, and that was Mr. Martin Hive with the EDL news for this upcoming promo, upcoming demonstration this Saturday, which Tommy's reading that great speech out, and I know it go down absolutely superb. Tommy, I was going to ask you, EDL, yeah, I was going yeah, exactly. We're coming. Anyway, Tommy, there's something I wanted to ask you. You made a YouTube video, didn't you, about the UAF? Maybe you'd like to explain to the listeners a little bit about that.
Listen, thank you, Kel, for that lovely comment you left on it. yeah.
You're more than welcome, Tommy. Rock the Casbah, you're really gonna like it. Gonna see some fashion.
Rock the Casbah. Yeah, I've got into making little YouTube. I've mainly done it to highlight the LGBT division, but I thought to myself, you know what, let's expose you for what they are. So I found the most unappealing picture of wearing Benny that I could find, to the point where my little brother couldn't even look at the computer screen while he was on.
Not the one with his phone out of his mouth, Tom.
But yeah, I took off loads of dirt on the background of the UAF leadership. You know, Wayman Bennett saying that it's time for the Jews to get out, and also preaching his support for the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes, exactly. So so you've made a YouTube. When did you do this, Tom? When did you make this YouTube? I'll have to check it out myself.
Monday, I think I put it up.
Monday?
Yeah, not too long ago.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check this out myself there. So, well done, Tommy, as usual. Tommy's put some good videos together, and I'm really quite proud of what he does. It's great stuff there, Tom.
I might not be a Red Fox blogger or a cat strangler, but, you know, we can get into the swing of YouTube.
Yeah, you do your bit, Tommy. You do a great job, like Frank, and then anybody that's associated with what we do within the English Defence League.
I also took some pictures of IQAF being violent against police lines, and I went, does that look familiar? And I think I put a picture on of Hitler's SA attacking police lines, one of their eyes, and went, oh, the irony.
Good point. Tommy, once again, I'll have to check that, because, ladies and gentlemen, if you get a chance to watch any of Tommy's YouTube videos that he's done, they're really good, really good to watch, and really highlights the issues that we talk about, what's happening in this country, what's happening on a daily basis. Tommy lives it, breathes it. Where he lives, he's just over the road or just a couple of blocks away, in it, Tom, is the hardcore of the Islamist part of the town where you live. Am I right, Tom?
I can completely agree with that one. If I go back 15 years ago, there weren't a single one of them on this street until, I think, about 11 when they started moving into Hull properly. But then after that, it's just gone. You know, this once beautiful city where people are moving out of it and they're moving
in. Yeah,
I know
it was.
And I think they said that we get a load of time.
Is it a total, it's upset, it's got to be upsetting for yourself, it's got to be rather upsetting for your parents and that, and your grandparents, to see what's happened to their beautiful town, in a place that they loved and that they brought up as children, to see that it deteriorated in this way, due to politicians, bunging them here, there and everywhere, and totally ruining a great town for where you live. But this is, ladies and gentlemen, this isn't just like where Tommy lives, but this is places all over the country. It used to be beautiful places. And I'm talking myself, what I remember as a child, which I've mentioned before on the show, of Tower Hamlets. And everybody knows about Tower Hamlets now. It's an Islamic enclave now. And it is so sad to see such, something, a place where, many years ago, people, this was the place to live, Tower Hamlets. I'd love to live at family, but not now. People can't wait to get away from it because of the whole situation, of the way that it's deteriorated, simply through politicians, their political correctness, the way that they've allowed these situations, and they just think that they can just, I'll make a speech, I will comment on it. That's it. That's all they do, comment on it. We want to see action. That's why we're here. This is why the English Defence League, we're fed up with politicians saying one thing and then doing something totally different while the situation deteriorates, while our children are being groomed out there, while kids go walking out unless they get mugged by these bloody Muslims gangs all the time. This is what we're up against, and this is why we're here. This is why we're not going nowhere. We'll never surrender to this Islamic enclave the way they treat our country. This will, one day, as Tim said, there will be questions to be answered, and hopefully that all the wrongs that's going on will be put to right. That's why we're here. That's why we continue to strive forward. With the English Defence League, this is what we're doing. That's our mission, and we will not go nowhere until things are put to right in this great country of ours. Any comments to that, Tim? I've gone on a bit of a rant there, which
I was just thinking, Jeff, that it wouldn't hurt for you to give that speech at the Slough demo, because I was absolutely enthralled with it when I was listening to it just now.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Why not?
Well, I think Jeff would be a public speaker, but I think the people at the back are struggling to see him.
Yeah, is that true? God. I'm the Tom Thumb of the EDL, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, isn't it, guys?
Spare thing goes to me. God, you're a tall lad, aren't you?
He is. I got to, I'm very short. I'm like Tom Thumb. I'm somewhat
I'm actually making a serious point here, Jeff. You deliver that speech in such a passionate way, and that's what people need to hear on these demos. They want to hear the anger and the passion in the speaker's voice. That's what they want to hear most of all. Anybody can sort of, you know, I mean, when I talk on the radio, I just talk in my normal voice. But when you talk, if you stood up in front of a microphone at a demo and said what you just said now, I think people would follow you anywhere. I really do.
I'm blushing now. This is what I'm saying.
Jeff, if
it wasn't, if I didn't have, you know, quite, you know, my health issues, and I was a bit more fit than I would love to do it. I would stand up and I would give speech. I wouldn't have to write, you know, I wouldn't have to write anything down. I would just make a speech of what we see before us. Look at our beautiful towns. Look at our cities. What are our politicians doing? That's the questions that I would throw out there. Basically, that's it. This is what I do on the show. I speak from my heart. I speak what I see. I'm distressed with what I see within my country, this great country of ours, with the politicians, the way that they've been destroying it, destroying our country, trying to sell our heritage, our future generations' heritage away from them. We will stand. We will fight against it. There's no two ways about it. If you're a patriot and you love your country, you do what's right. For your country, and that's exactly what we're all doing. And if me doing my thing on the radio show, I might not be able to be at some of the public events as what I would like to be because of my, well, the last time I went to one, I ended up with pneumonia. I've got to be very careful.
Oh, fair enough.
But if I can do this on shows and speak the way I feel, I know that we got loads of people out there that listen to the show. And they know that I'm very passionate about it, and I will continue to. This is my place, Tim. This is where I'm supposed to be.
I was just thinking, though. Credit where it's due. You do have the kind of voice that sort of make people feel very strongly about the issues, and I think that's what's needed.
Thank you.
Chat. It says, Jeff, you were great on TV. When was that? I missed that.
When I was in Norwich,
anybody.
could you link it to us? I wanna watch that, please.
Yes,
I'm here to defend the rights of the Christian pastor and that's why I'm here today. That's why a lot of us are here today. This is a little bit different. Normally we go to those mosques and things. This is something completely different that's important to myself and many of us who are here.
That was, Tommy knows it word by word. And there is a link out there somewhere. Tommy or Kel, I wonder if you could
type in on our Google EDL Norwich 2012 ITV News and you'll find it. It says ITV spoke to him. Yeah, he was really good. He gave his big cheery smile and, you know, I'm surprised he edited it out so he's going, we're here to provoke everybody.
I've done the BBC as well, didn't I, Tom? I've done the ITV and BBC.
You did ITV, BBC. But yeah, you should start speaking on demo. But it's just a shame with your health, you can't travel very fast. So that's if we go back to East Anglia this year.
Well, that is it, guys. And you, Tommy, you know I would do that. It wouldn't bother me. I'd get up and do a speech every time. And I'd just speak what we talk about on the show week in, week out. These are the things that I would talk about, you know. Maybe I would make a few little highlight a few issues and notes from that, but I'm better off doing what as I do as it comes.
I reckon, in respect to Jeff, I think we should get the next Muslim planning application to try and build a mosque next to Jeff's house. So then, when we have a demo, he won't have so
Are
far to travel.
I'd approve that myself.
Thank you, Tim.
I was just thinking of your health, mate. We'll just have a mosque built next to your house.
I think a bit of cultural sensitivity do Jeff some good. I think we should let him.
he'd love it.
Oh, good beauty. I was going to say, guys, we normally have a roll call at the top of the hour, but the show, because Tom's speech and that, and we play, and we've been in discussion. But I was wondering if we could have a quick roll call, because we are, you know, ticking down. We've got probably about 10 minutes to the end of the show. So I was wondering, Kel, if you could do the great honours tonight of reading down our great guests, some great people in the chat room this evening, if we could possibly do that.
Absolutely, Jeff. My pleasure.
Thank you, Kel.
And ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you, you're listening to the East Anglian EDL Radio Show with your host, Jeff Mitchell. And his panelist tonight is Tommy English, Tim Burton, and Kel Fritzy. Everybody, we'd like to welcome Agador and Bigfoot, pardon me, Catform, Dodgy Dave, Eric Kyle, Frank EDL, who is joining us on the line. We have some guests in here, Jeff and Tommy and Tim, Golf Dogs, Paul Alexander, and Stanger is here with us. We've had people pop in and people pop out. And we have people listening on the line. Last but never least is our sweet Sue from New Mexico.
Yeah, bless you, Sue. I know I see Vito Espirito. I'll get it wrong. Espirito.
Vito was here earlier as well. That's right.
Yeah.
If I can quickly get this, if I wish to close the show, I'm not sure if I commit to our night show for me travelling. Obviously Lincoln tomorrow night, but I'll try and make it if I can, but if not, just reach me on my phone, then give me a call, inbox me or tweet me, whatever. Pictures will be following on Saturday, so keep your eyes on me Twitter.
Yeah, and I will be in touch with you like we normally do, Tommy, okay?
Did you think that time was on the way to Bang when Jeff was all singing Christmas carols? I think I rung you and we're doing that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, when we started singing Mary's Boy Child Jesus Christ was born on Christmas. I think I rung you saying, Jeff, we're singing Christmas carols.
that's right, mate. Now, as I say, we always like to keep up with what's going on with Tommy when he's on his travels. It's always, but what's really nice sometimes, oh, my God, I've just seen a horrible spider.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Anyway,
your new pet.
Kel.
You got a new pet.
What do you like, Kel?
Now, Jeff, don't be racist to spiders. Arachnids is a peaceful religion.
Oh, it's I'll be called everything. I was the first. Oh my God, I keep looking at this. Kel, what do you like?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you scroll up to the show highlights and look at the picture slides, Jeff got a new pet, and it's a beautiful, beautiful big blue spider.
Kel, I've got a bit of a problem here. I can't see this spider. I can't see this spider. Maybe I need a new web browser. Do you think that's the problem?
Oh, my, the humour never stops on the East Anglian radio show. Comedy Central.
maybe somebody is a spider for tomorrow night's show.
Oh, that's a horrible one. Kel, I dare you. That is bad. You know I'm
If you've got a spider around you, Jeff, mate, then there'll be no flies on you, or they won't hang about.
My God, there's all these jokes rolling. You guys, what are you like, Frank? That's funny, mate. but once again, you guys, I love, I've got to admit, ladies and gentlemen, it's always a great honour, a great privilege to present this show to some great...
Right in the chat room, and Eric Kyle said, when Jeff's birthday comes around, we can chip in and buy him a Spider-Man suit.
Eric, what do you like, bruv?
What are you saying? Say that,
I'll take him to go see Spider-Man 3D.
I'm telling you, Grandpa's fantastic.
Hey, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm never going to live down that I've got a phobia about spiders. Kel's always doing it to me.
You should have told us before, Jeff.
yeah, I should have done.
We didn't know. We didn't know. Kel's been putting all these pictures of spiders on there, and we didn't know you had a spider phobia. That's terrible.
No, of course you didn't, Tim.
I will tell you a story, guys. I completely sympathise with Jeff here, because my mum's got a really horrible crippling fear of spiders. And when I was 6 years old, I got one of those spiders off the end of a rod that hangs for a bit of string, and she was fast asleep on the stairs, hovering it over her neck, and she woke up and she gave the most blood-curdling scream I ever heard in my life, and she pierced around the back garden with a piece of wood with a nail in it for 10 minutes.
Well, I've told many stories of what my mum done to me when I was about 14 and I was going to school. She said, Jeff, she said, I'll go in the toilet and pull the light. I can't get it to work. So I goes in there. All right, Mum. I pulled the light cord. It was just a light cord thing. As I pulled it, I felt something fur in my pocket on the light, and I didn't even look. I just put my hand in my pocket and pressed my hand in my pocket. I didn't even give it a thought. And she said, Did you see it? I went, what? She had a dirty great big spider wrapped around the light cord. I've done nothing more. I've dropped my trousers, Tim and guys.
Oh,
and this bloody great spider walked out of my pocket. Oh, my ears were standing up. That's what my mum done to me. Now, when I've got this phobia so much, my goodness me. But do you know what, guys? We've all been talking about... No flies on me. Frank, what do you like? I've got to thank you as well, Frank, for taking part in the panel this evening. Great, it's great as usual, brother. Will you be grabbing into Slough, bruv?
Oh yeah. In fact, there's a lady, a woman I've just met as a friend of his friend, and they're interested in the EDL, and she's coming along.
Oh, nice one, mate. Nice one. Well, you'll catch up with Tommy and have our chin wag with our dear old Tommy there, mate.
Yeah, well, I promised her, because she's a bit nervous, but she's interested. And I've promised her that we'll be back here by 5 o'clock, because it's only an hour and a half, 2 hours from here.
Yeah, no, it's not too
And
I'm going
to do my best, so...
down to the wire.
I've got to be moving on now. I've got to thank you all for taking part on the panel this evening. Everybody that's been in the chat room, I've got this lady whispering in my ear, you've got 90 seconds. So I'm going to say goodnight, take care, stay safe, God bless you all. And from us all, no surrender.
Take care,
surrender.
Stay safe, God bless.
Ever.
And remember.
And we're going underground. It's what about
no surrender.
No surrender.
No surrender ever. No surrender ever.
Good night, Frank. Good night, Tommy.
Good
night, Tim.
Good night,
I'm so happy. I can't see that fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your voice. Pleasure as they hate me, I've been enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me, I'm too busy dodging green and black. To be here, so what you get, you made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader, not place your trust, and the lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns, and the public wants what the public gets, but I don't give up. Going underground.
did go, and we are into archives, archives, archives.
Archives.
You guys, the bloody spider jokes. What can I do with you lot?
Well, it's your own fault, Jeff. You should have told us that you had a fear of spiders. We didn't know anything about it. Did we, Kel? Yeah. Not a thing. We didn't know anything about it.
Absolutely no. I should have bought him all those spider kits.
We're bloody milking it now, aren't you guys?
We'd have known you had a fear of spiders, mate. We would have started sooner. I've got to say,
guys, that tonight, once again, another great show. And thanks for the comments, Tim, that you made about me being a spokesman and that, you know.
When it comes to giving speeches in public, one of the things you've got, it's not so much your subject matter that's important, it's the way in which you express it. And if you can put the passion into your voice like that, I haven't had the pleasure of listening to you speak live at a demo the way some of these other guys have in the past. You know, you said you've been on TV and everything with some of the things you've been saying. But yeah, you put a bit of passion in there, and it doesn't really matter so much about the subject matter. Is people get caught up in the passion of the moment, especially at a live demo, and that's what you need.
I was going to say there is. Kel, there is a link to when I've done those interviews, wasn't there? We've got it at somewhere, haven't we? Maybe Tim would like to have a look at it. I was just thrust out there. They said, "Come on, Jeff, you've been the spokesman today." I went, "What?" There I was, cameras in front of me. As a big woman, I'm only a little guy, as you know, Tim. I mean, she was big, this woman. You've seen it, haven't you, Kel? She was carrying over me. There was all flashing lights going around me, wouldn't they? I just said what I had to say, you know, and I think it made an impact. In fact, there was a statement that was made by the UF as Jeff Mitchell, the Joseph Goebbels of the EDL. Tommy told me they made a comment about it.
Yeah, talking about the UAF, we could come up with a new expression for schizophrenia. We could call it the leader of the UAF. What was his name again?
Wayman Bennett.
Anyway, Wayman Bennett. Yeah, that's Wayman Bennett now means schizophrenia because. There he is, back in the moors, and he's anti-fascist. So how we can square that circle, I don't know. It's got to be...
Well, he's not only... But he's anti-Semitic as well. He's even mentioned about getting the Jews out and all that.
Which is exactly what fascists are. So how's he anti-fascist and anti-Semitic and pro-Islam? That's not even a circle to square now.
It's hypocritical, isn't it? It's like a deranged person speaking, isn't it? I can't see any logic in what he says. He doesn't make no sense. Whatever he says, he doesn't make no sense. But that's maybe that.
So now we've got a word for it. Instead of having to chase him around in circles, now we've got a word for it. Oh, he's doing a Wayman Bennett.
Yeah. Well, very good point there. I mean, but Tim, your comment on that Wayman Bennett, you've seen him in action.
I don't know that I actually have seen him in action. I've heard you guys talking.
Oh, we got to look at his YouTube.
And
I think it makes Kel feel sick.
Take a dose of bloody Chowdhury, yeah. Mix it in with a bit of George Galloway, and then put a bit of Quillam in it, and then a bit of any psychopath you can think of. Just mix it up, and there you've got it, Wayman Bennett.
Yeah. Well, I think with most of these people, you've got to be very careful about what words they actually use, because a lot of the time they use words which actually means the opposite of what you'd normally think they'd mean, but they don't bother to tell you that. And we've had quite a few conversations about the meaning of words and how they are distorted and hijacked by people on the left so that they don't mean what normal people think they mean in the context that's being used. Yeah. And you have to be quite discerning when you listen to the speeches of some of these people, because otherwise you can't, it is actually quite difficult to understand what it is they're getting at. And a lot of people, for example, will say, oh, well, I mean, let's just take a simple example. They'll say the EDL are racist. And there's so many people out there, even now, who will just take a statement like that at face value, and they won't even think about it because they haven't been taught to think critically. This is one of the problems with our educational system, and certainly over the last 30 or 40 years, is that the ability to think critically has been degraded by the nature of the education that kids have received over the last 30 or 40 years, that you can get people like the UAF and various other fascist groups, and they'll come out with something like, oh, the EDL are racist. And a lot of people won't even analyze that and say to, well, what is it exactly about the EDL that's racist? What race is Islam, for a start? They won't even ask that question. I mean, we ask it, okay, because we to a certain extent, to a greater or lesser extent, I think it applies to most of us, we've started to think more about the meanings of words, and we've started to realize that when somebody says, oh, you're racist, or oh, the EDL is racist, we can formulate arguments against that and present them in a clear, coherent, and reasonable and logical way, so that people can see, when that argument is explained to them, that in fact the EDL are not racist for a number of reasons, Islam is not a race for a number of other reasons, and you can point to various links, you can point to various official documents and so on. I mean, you just take a simple thing like racism and how it's applied to Islam, and you can take it apart, but most people don't do it. And that's why I think organizations like us are so important, because we can spread, we can not just say, no, we're not racist, but we can quote chapter and verse about why we are not racist, why Islam is not a race, why Islam should not be given the protection of laws that are designed to protect people of given races. And that's where we're valuable, is because if we didn't stand up and say these things, the left would still be trying to get away with statements like, oh, anybody who disagrees with us or who says anything against Islam is a racist or an Islamophobe, yeah, or a bigot or whatever.
Yeah, that's been overplayed, isn't it? The word racist, I mean, being a patriot, being someone who loves the country, who cares about what happens in their country, calling yourself a patriot, basically, in their eyes, is you're a racist. You're a racist because of your views, because you're a patriot, because you love your country. You want to do what's right in your country. You want to guide politicians to do the right thing. That's why we're the biggest pressure group in the world. That is what we're trying to do. It's just a shame that these politicians don't listen to what we got to say and do something positively. I mean, they're paid the big money. We're not paid, but, you know, we're not paid to do it, you know, to be doing a show. I'll pay it for myself. I don't get sponsored by anybody. I do it because I'm a patriot. I love my country. I do what's right, and it doesn't matter about the expense of what it is. As far as I'm concerned, I'll do it because it's something that needs to be done. It's something that had been done before, and what we've done is created people who are actually critical thinking people now, who are not scared to speak out against what's going on. You know, on a global thing, people in different parts of the world, you know, they're like the Buddhists. They've got a Buddhist Defence League. Of course, what was going on, they see what we was doing, and they formed their own Buddhist Defence League. Can you believe it, guys?
that they actually listen to what we got to say. And this is how we've reverberated right the way across the globe. I'm very proud to be a part of this great organisation. And we are going great.
You've got every reason to. But here's one thing, see. You're never going to be able to answer their question. You're never going to be able to refute their accusation of being a racist until you've determined one thing, and you've got to ask them this question: exactly what do you mean by racist? Because there's
when they state their
yes, this is what I mean by racist, then you've got something to. I mean, if they say a racist is someone who loves his own country, then you say, yeah, well, under those terms, I'm not arguing with you. I'm a racist. If they say with somebody who believes his own culture is preferable to others, many others, you say, yep, that's me, racist. End of story. But when they come out of all this Islamophobia and all that bollocks, well...
The thing about it is, Frank, when you had, and I've had it many times.
That was a compliment, Tim. I meant that as a compliment.
I understand what you say, and it's an argument that I've played out in front of the mirror several times a day for the last 6 weeks, because I know that's one of the accusations that's going to be thrown at me on February the 18th. When I stand up in court, I'm sure the prosecuting counsel, one of the first questions they're going to be asking straight out of the block is, why are you such a bigoted, racist Islamophobe or something like that? They'll point to something I've written, and they will try and paint me in the worst possible light right out of the block, because they want to create a bad impression. So, I agree with what you say. You have to try and get the terms defined so that you can answer as accurately as possible.
Don't get sucked in and don't move on till they do. Be adequate. Be adamant about that. Don't move on. It's tempting, and it's going to be easy to rise to a fly. But until you know exactly what they mean by racist, you've taken an oath, and you honestly can't answer whether you're a racist or not when you don't know what they mean by it.
The word racist, as I say, it's been overplayed, and my argument would be, well, define being a racist. Would you, because I'm a patriot, because I believe what's wrong, that the politics in this country has enabled Islamists to grow and mount over the time. And I'm a racist because I do believe that there's a time that we say enough is enough. Is that being a racist? No, I'm Islam is not a race. I'd say.
I was using that as an example of the way that the political left hijack words and phrases that we might otherwise think are innocuous. And of course, Muslims do it all the time when they talk about certain abstract concepts. And I was talking to this with Kel only yesterday. They mean things that are quite different from what we mean. So if we're going to have a discussion with them, or if we're talking about those concepts, we have to be very careful how those concepts are defined, because different people on the left and in Muslims in particular don't think of them in the same way. And if we allow them to set the agenda of what these words mean, we're going to find it very difficult to overcome that problem. But it's always going to be a battle.
What we stand for is protecting freedom and democracy. That's what we're doing. We're fighting to protect the future generations of having afforded as of what we've had with freedom to be able to speak out against the injustices and things that's going on in their countries. And if that is stopped, I mean, our future generations, that they would, as Tommy Robinson once said, they will never forgive us if we don't do something right now, this time, the minute, the hour. You know, and I will stand by that. And I know you will, Tim. I know you will, Frank and Mikel. It's so important that we must continue. No matter what, we got to keep moving forward and we must keep banging our drum. There will be no surrender to any of this political correctness garbage and into Islam and to Sharia and to all the bloody mosques. We will never surrender to these people, ever. Not while I got breath in my body.
I've been saying this for years, mate. I've been saying this for years, long before I heard about the EDL, long before I even woke up to what the Muslims up to. I was saying this. So that's 30 years,
that
maybe.
Me too, Frank.
If you're not dead, then it's no use lying down because the bastards won't give you any peace.
I agree with that. Just, well said, Frank. Kel,
surrender,
your
not
thoughts.
An option.
No, exactly. Well said. Well said, Frank. Kel, your thoughts on what you've been hearing, what me and Frank and Tim's been talking about.
My name is Kel Fritzy, and I am indeed a racist.
Yeah.
Go to hell, Islam.
Yeah, that's it, Kel. You tell him.
Bless you, Kel.
My name's Frank Day, and I am indeed a racist. You started the ball rolling. I'm going along with you.
Yeah.
There you go.
My name's Jeff Mitchell, and I'm a dyed-in-the-wool racist. Oh, sorry. Who said that?
Very good, Tim. But what I was going to say, guys, I'm going because I'm a bit. You must hear. I haven't even had a cup of tea, so I'm running a bit dry at the moment. So I was just wondering if Kel, if you could play us out for this team. Before we go though. I've just got to make a mention, which I didn't do on the last show. All our serving military who's in Afghanistan, wherever you might be, we're all thinking of you and know your family. I know that they do listen to the shows as well. So, guys, we're thinking of you. I know you'll be home repatriated with your families in the very near future. Just stay safe and come home safely. So with that, I'm going to... Kel, have we got a tune to play out for this evening?
I think that we're going to play a song that I loaded up for Tommy a little while back.
Oh, lovely, Kel. Thank you.
Okay. And
thank you so much, guys. Thank you, Kel, Tim, and
Tim,
Frank, for being a part of
I was just
going
to say, just before we close off for the evening, I'd just like us to say a special word of thanks for Kel for putting this show together and all the technical work she does behind the scenes, because you don't know how difficult it is, ladies and gentlemen, to actually put together a show like this. It might look very easy on the surface, and indeed Kel makes it look very easy, but there's a lot of work she puts in, so a big thank you to Kel for everything she does on the show to make it all run smoothly.
Yes.
Tim, thank you so very much.
Exactly. That's what I always say. She's a great, you know, great part of our team, and that keeps things rolling, rocking and rolling as we normally do. So with that, and Frank, once again, thank you for joining the panel this evening and making your views heard to everybody. So with that, I'm going to say good night to you all.
Yes, indeed.
Good night. You know, bring it up to date.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, then, Frank. Cheers, buddy. So we can have a debriefing, ladies and gentlemen. Sunday's, I know Tommy will be calling in and he'll be giving a debriefing about his speech when, and Frank's going to call in with the way he saw things as well. So this is your show to be. Yeah. Okay, and I would say we've got a show tomorrow night, and this is on Friday, and this is the eve of the Slough demonstration. Will you be on the road tomorrow night? Will you be listening to the show, Frank?
Yeah, I'll be listening if I don't call him, but I won't be on the road. It's only an hour and a half up the road from me. It's only going to cost me a couple of quid beyond zone six. Up to there, I'll get me old farts pass. So, no sweat.
Nice one, bud. Okay then, Frank. Well, I'll speak to you soon anyway, mate, okay? And with that, from myself and from us all, good night, take care, stay safe. And with that, I'll pass it over to Kel for the last night and the evening. And good night, guys.
Yeah, good night, Jeff. Good night, Frank.
Good night, everybody.
good night,
Jeff. Good night, Frank. And good night, Sam. And thank you very much for your very kind words. And here we go, gentlemen.
My pleasure, Kel.
My Kel.
Thank you very much for planning us out for the evening, Kel. And I'll speak to you real soon. I might have a chat to you tomorrow in the daytime.
You bet, Jeff. Another fine program. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, Kel.
Okay.
Thank you for a week.
Take care.
Thank
good
you.
Night, everybody. Good night, Jeff, and good night, everybody.
Good night, Kyle.